Today in the executive suite, where we look at the decision-making processes of executives at the highest levels of the federal government, we're taking a look at the book Transforming American Governance. It's edited by Alan Baludis, Terry Buss, and Dwight Inc. And Alan Baludis is in studio with me as we talk about this book today. Alan, of course, is the director and distinguished fellow at the Internet Business Solutions Group at Cisco, the first chief information officer at the Commerce Department, a founding member of the Federal CIO Council, and a fellow at the National Academy of Public Administration. And I don't know why a distinguished person like you continues to associate with somebody like me, but I'm glad you do, and it's good to have you in the studio.
I'm glad I do, too. Thanks for having me, Francis.
I'm happy to do it. Throughout the course of the program today, we are going to talk to three people who have contributed to this book. This book is not a book in the traditional sense. It's a collection of essays.
It's an edited volume, yeah.
Yeah, by people who are really knowledgeable about the issue of government transformation. We're going to hear from Dr. Robert Childs, the Chancellor of the National Defense University's iCollege, Dr. Norman Jackness, Director of Cisco's IBSG Public Sector Group and the former CIO of Westchester County, New York, and Thomas Stanton, a fellow at the Center for the Study of American Government at Johns Hopkins University. But before we get to them, we'll talk to them on the phone throughout the course of the hour. Before we talk to them, I want to get a sense of how this book came about and what you want somebody to get out of this after they've read through it.
Sure. Well, thanks. We're coming up on the anniversary of 9/11, as you know, and one of the great phrases then and since has been that after 9/11, everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things did change. A lot of things have changed during this period as we come up now on 10 years after that horrible event. But one of the things that hasn't changed really is our governance system. So I think the book grew out of a couple of different things. One, it was based on some of the very good work already done by people like Don Kettle at the University of Maryland, who is a contributor to this volume, Elaine Kmark up at Harvard, my friends and colleagues over at the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and several folks elsewhere in our Cisco's Business Solutions Group, the firm's strategy and consulting arm. I think the other drivers of this were that we seem to be at a confluence where, as a nation, we're facing a number of very serious problems, the large and growing fiscal imbalance driven by an aging population, which is going to drive up healthcare and retirement costs. You got a host of other challenges like the war on terror, competition from emerging world powers such as China and India, energy costs, environmental concerns. You have the kind of point in government where one generation is ready to leave. Maybe this long-predicted retirement tsunami will finally come given some of the challenges and the fact that there's no incentive to stay on longer for any kind of high three out of retirement.
Mm-hmm.
A new generation coming in and some very powerful technologies that allow for collaboration and involvement in a way that we haven't that hasn't existed in the past. So those were the kinds of things that led us to try to develop this volume and pull together a group of experts that we thought had some interesting observations on this topic of a change, the need for change in American government. And could speak to various aspects of it, could take the discussions to a new level of specificity. And in the case of people like Dr. Jackness, who we'll hear from shortly, could give us the perspective of from state and local governments, which have been facing some of the financial pressures earlier. Others in the volume give us a perspective from nations overseas. So it was actually a very fun project to engage in, and I'm very pleased with the way it's come together. I think it's a thought-provoking volume.
When you compare, as you do at the beginning of this, the chain of events going on in the world and the chain of events and transformation as it happens in government. I think you get to one of the core criticisms that people outside of government have of government itself, and that is it doesn't really change that much. The events of the world kind of pass it by. We're seeing today on federalnewsradio.com an effort by the Army to transform the institutional side of the Army, which Army Secretary McHugh says hasn't really changed much since the 1970s. That's not uncommon in government. No. Is that a fair criticism, do you think?
I think it is a fair criticism. I often look at the difference between the private sector and the public sector in the sense that they're really, you can't find companies today that are in any way similar to doing business in any way similar to the way they did business a decade ago, even shorter periods of time. And in fact, a lot of companies that were the prominent firms and Fortune 50 companies 20 or 30 years ago no longer exist, mm-hmm. because they failed to see or accept or be influenced by some of the changes that were required. But I think government is remarkably similar to the way it existed 50 or 60 years ago, the last time under the Hoover commissions that we had a really fundamental look at the way in which our government does business. And I think if you had some kind of time tunnel-like device and you could bring people back that had been executives in that period of time, have a couple of days' worth of adjustments, but I think they'd find the way you do budgeting, the way you do personnel, the way you do acquisition, a lot of it is largely the same. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I don't think when you look at the array of problems, the challenges government faces today, and the need for us to deal not only with more pressures, more challenges under very severe fiscal constraints, and our need to be able to deal with them in a very fast and agile manner, we're really, I think, facing major difficulties in our ability to do so.
Let's assume that government was willing to change, and we can talk more about that throughout the course of the hour with you and with the guests that we'll have on. But let's assume that for the time being. Is the government, do you think, ready or willing to ready or able to change, or is it just headed in such a direction? We hear the analogy all the time, it's a huge ship and you can't turn it on a dime. Is that precluding change from happening?
It is. And again, when I liken it to the private sector, I'll often say to some of my colleagues in the private sector, you got to realize government is a Fortune 1 company. You know, in the sheer size and scale and the responsibilities it faces make change difficult. And of course, too, you can't be quite as innovative. You can't say, to this group of Social Security recipients, we're going to kind of do things differently with you just to try to test things out.
Guess
so,
what?
So I certainly, having spent such a good bit of my career in government, I certainly understand the constraints. But I think government has done very innovative things, and I think it really, unless the answer is with all of these things that are happening, that government is going to do less with less, that in fact it will be driven to change. And I think it is capable of changing, and I think it's certainly capable of innovation.
We've got to wrap up and take a break and talk to Dr. Childs, but I'm heartened by your use of the term less with less. Not because I have an opinion about whether the government should do less or not, but I've talked on this show a lot about what I call right-sizing the mission, and that is if you're going to give an agency two-thirds of the employees that they have now and you're going to give them two-thirds of the money they have now, then you got to let them know which third of the work that they're currently doing that you don't expect them to do anymore. And that, to me, negates the whole idea of more with less, which I don't think is realistic. Is that a reasonable way to look at things?
I think that is a reasonable way to look at it. I remember some foreign visitors years ago at the Department of Commerce, and I had just finished up a budget briefing, and one of them said, I didn't realize at the time how tongue-in-cheek he was, said, I want to meet this colleague of yours the one they call less. Because every time we meet, he says, we're always going to do more with less. Who is this less who is doing so much more work for
He's exhausted. He's off today because he's just exhausted. That's Alan Baludis of Cisco, one of the co-editors of the book Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square. You can learn more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And one of the contributors to the book, Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the National Defense University, will join us in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
NASA awarded the final of four contracts to revamp its IT infrastructure. Under the Information Technology Infrastructure Integration Program, known as I3P, NASA awarded four technology contracts over the past year that could be worth more than $4 billion. In the latest deal, the space agency hired the Portal Group Consulting. The company will install and operate hardware and software and provide support services for NASA headquarters in Washington. The five-year contract is worth $82 million.
If you're in federal IT, you know that every internet connection and every mobile device poses a threat to your data. Visit cdwg.com/security to learn how our security experts use the latest technology to help keep your agency ahead of those threats. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how Symantec Endpoint Protection can simplify management and provide scalable multi-layer protection and recovery.
You can't build a house without a strong foundation, and you can't build a truly efficient data center without storage efficiency. If you're in federal IT, you know the importance of operating as efficiently as possible. NetApp storage is flexible, easy to manage, and requires far less hardware, often only half as much. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency, built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like Thundercat Technology. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Schneider Electric has a proven 100-year-long record of supporting federal agencies to help you meet your responsibilities to mandates, missions, and taxpayers by combining the expertise of brands you know and trust, like Square D, APC, and Pelco, to make your energy safe, reliable, efficient, productive, and green. When it comes to power, process and machine, IT room, building, and security management, Schneider Electric's your energy expert and green partner for a sustainable and prosperous future. Visit Schneider-Electric.us.
I work to help our nation, and my work makes an impact. I help our government and allies around the world keep their citizens safe from terrorism and cyber warfare. I work for Mantech International Corporation.
Mantech employees work side by side with our troops and government in the U.S. and overseas protecting our homeland. We have more than 10,000 professionals doing rewarding work every day. So if you're an IT professional, security expert, intelligence analyst, or engineer, apply for openings today at Mantech.com/careers.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Wednesday morning's Federal Drive, the latest update on the next generation 911 system from the chairman of the FCC, Julius Genachowski. And agencies are cutting their IT budgets. Analysis from Deltek Inputs, Kevin Plexico. That and more Wednesday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out on federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking in the executive suite today about the book Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square. The editors of the book are Terry Bust, Dwight Inc., and my in-studio guest, Alan Baludis. And one of the contributors to this book is Dr. Robert Childs. He's chancellor of the National Defense University iCollege and joining us, believe it or not, Alan, from Disney World.
taking time out of that to be on the show today to talk to us.
I hope we can get Mickey or Goofy on the line, too.
Well, I was hoping more for Snow White, but that's just me.
All right.
Bob, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for being here. You co-wrote a piece in this book, along with Paulette Robinson, Terry McGovern, and Jerry Gingrich, called The Millennial Generation. And you're talking about a number of things that make the millennial generation different and what they can add. Talk about why it was that this topic interested you enough in the first place to want to send something down and to put in this book.
Well, being involved in the information business, it's how people use the technologies today. And if you want to take a look at public policy, what the Obama administration, Vivek Kundra, and everybody's trying to do is they're trying to get into the concept of transparency and everybody having a chance in the democracy of participating. Consequently, I thought it was exactly where we needed to be, taking a look at social media and the things of that sort and how the millennials were using that as compared to the older generation.
You part of this focuses on redrawing boundaries and the things that people used to do are no longer things that people do, or the structures of organizations look differently. That concept, I think, is probably the most fascinating because people coming in, some of these the people that are called millennials, come into organizations and expect a completely horizontal organization, which is really the antithesis of what government organizations have traditionally looked like. Is that right?
Well, it's absolutely true. In fact, the other day I had a couple businessmen in that were they ran multi-million-dollar businesses. And I had a couple of our research assistants in, and these are people that are working on bachelor's and master's degrees. And they entered right into the conversation. Obviously, they didn't butt into it, but given the chance, when I turned and looked to them for a couple answers, they acted it was just like normal to talk to people like this and offer their opinions. And the thing that I found interesting about this is typically when I grew up, you know, you're waited your turn. You were in an organization, you worked your way up through the chain, and then you were allowed to be at the table and have an impact on things. And that's totally changed now. These millennials have great ideas, and we have to capture what they can do.
That's kind of the opposite of how a lot of folks, especially in our generation and up, look at having this new generation of people in the workforce. Is it fair to say that is rather uncomfortable for a lot of folks in the so-called boomer generation?
Well, it was uncomfortable for me. What you have to do is you literally have to establish a framework, work parameters, and then let people go. And probably your best example is Google. When I was flying out here to California on the plane, they had a little film clip on Inside Google. And the idea there is they create an environment where people can play and eat and everything, and they can come together and collaborate really kind of without boundaries. They don't have you in a department. They don't have you confined to a certain area. You can kind of move around, and you have a relationship with some people for one project, other people for another project. So traditional boundary lines aren't there anymore. And that's what these people want. They do not want time constraints, departmental constraints. They want the tools, and they want the opportunities to do their thing.
In an environment, though, where you have 535 members of a board of directors looking over your shoulder, is that a workable model? At some point, somebody is going to say, all right, come up to Capitol Hill and explain to us how you're doing this. And if it's not a structure, not even necessarily hierarchy, but if it's not a structure that is easily explainable on the Hill, it's not going to last very long.
Well, isn't that what we have now, to a degree? Let me put it in a wartime scenario. I was at a warfighters integration conference the other day, and the Army and the Marine Corps were talking about using different devices in the field, and they said the best thing they found out is to give the troops the tools and let the troops figure out how to use them. In other words, it doesn't have to be an enterprise solution. Now, I didn't answer your question at all. I kind of gave another example of how it might work. I don't know how it works for 535 people. I can't answer that question. I think that's what we're struggling with in government. How do we make things open? How do we let people participate? Yet how do we get some kind of semblance of order out of everything? I think that's the difficult part.
As we continue to watch the millennial generation move into higher and higher positions of influence in government, how can we expect the structures to change, or how can we expect operations to change within the structures that have to stay the way they are now?
Well, I think the operations, I think you're in a, almost rather than the top down, you're in a situation right now where it's ground up. I can remember when BlackBerry's came into the enterprise, we were sitting around the table discussing, the CIO from TSA was saying, gee, I've got people using this device called a BlackBerry, and they want the enterprise to support that. I think what we're going to have to do is figure out how we can capture some of these things in the enterprise and make sense out of them. I'm struggling with that. For example, how do you use YouTube? How do you use Facebook to bring value added to the organization? There's a million and one ideas out there. How do you capture them? Another example, I just bought a mattress recently. And what I did, I went onto the internet and I Googled some different companies, and I was reading, I was crowdsourcing. I was seeing what the majority of people that had that mattress had to say about it. So this is not the enterprise, the store, the company telling me what was good about it. These were people like me that had used it. Now, in one place, there were 535 responses. Your reference to government. How do I deal with that? Because there was good news and there were bad news, but I kind of looked for a consensus when I made my decision on a final buy.
All right. Well, all of this information is a lot of people in government struggling with this, and I appreciate you helping us try to understand a little bit more this afternoon, Bob. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to
and
you.
And enjoy the rest of your vacation out there, too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Dr. Robert Childs is Chancellor of the National Defense University, iCollege. The whole idea of struggling with a new group of people has been a lot more challenging, I think, maybe in this generation than in previous generations. Is that fair to say?
I don't know that it's different. I think each generation brings its own challenges. I think what is different is the fact that we're at such a major point where literally a third of the federal workforce could switch out, and you could have this kind of massive the overused tsunami phrase, as opposed to any kind of gradual shift or change. But I think they'd bring obviously their own unique characteristics and energy and vigor. They also bring difficult and different managerial challenges. But I think this really is a time when some new and different approaches may be in order, and I welcome welcome them to leadership roles in the public service workforce.
You wrote a blog post on about this book, and we posted that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so that folks can go and see that anytime they want. That's Alan Belutis of Cisco, who is one of the co-editors of this book, Transforming American Governance. Another contributor to the book is Dr. Norman Jackness, and we'll talk to him in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Cloud computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how. Cloud Advantage for Government. The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com. Brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
A Attention federal agencies. Want to upgrade your old, inefficient printer? Buy select HP printers and save up to $700 instantly when you trade in your old laser or inkjet printer. Best of all, the shipping and recycling of your old printer are free as part of the HP Trade-In and Save program. Take advantage of this offer from GovConnection, the federal marketplace's trusted source for technology products, contract expertise, and exceptional service. For complete details, call GovConnection today at 1-800-800-0019.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A. The guest is Dan Doherty, Vice President of EMC Federal. Today's question, how are IT managers accelerating cloud and virtualization while reducing the cost of infrastructure?
Federal customers have to do more with less. EMC Unified Storage is simple and efficient in virtualized environments. Having the most integration with virtual environments means you go faster and save more money.
So EMC takes the risk and cost out of virtualized environments.
That's right. EMC is number one in virtualized environments.
Now available on GSA schedule through government acquisition.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Authors, exploring national security, power, and leadership in the 21st century. What is smart power? How do 21st century challenges demand a reshaping and redefining of global leadership? And how best can national security leaders transform the intelligence enterprise to meet today's needs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Professor Joseph Nye, author of The Future of Power, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Profile America, Tuesday, August 16th. From just about any perspective, Amos Alonzo Stagg, who was born on this date in 1862, was an amazing man. He played the first public game of basketball and also on the first All-American football team. In addition, he was a gifted baseball player. But it is his impact as a football coach for which he is remembered. In his coaching career, Stagg developed the lateral pass, the man in motion, the use of helmets, the tackling dummy, and putting players' names on the backs of their uniforms. He died at the age of 102. Now, many of Stagg's innovations are an accepted part of college football, played by 630 colleges, whose games are watched by more than 48 million people annually. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest in studio this hour is Alan Baludis of Cisco. He's one of the co-editors of the book Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square and the Public Square Itself, the subject of one of the contributions in this book. Dr. Norman Jackness is director of Cisco's IBSG Public Sector Group and former CIO of Westchester County, New York, and he joins us now to talk about his contribution, A New Kind of Public Square for Urban America. Norm's great to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
What is it exactly that will reshape the public square for people in the United States?
Well, I think that the public square, along with the economy, is really changing rather dramatically because of two factors. One is the ubiquitous communications network that we see all around us, including very high-quality video. That really makes it sort of almost possibly anywhere and feel as if you're right next to somebody. And the second has to do with the increasingly large percentage of people who are in the knowledge economy, or at least in providing intangible services. Both those things require a redefinition of what urban America is about. It's an economic redefinition, and it also is going to affect the way the nature of politics in cities.
It's interesting because over the last 10 years, there are some cities, D.C.'s one of them, that have experienced at least some level of revitalization where people have moved from the suburbs back into the cities. What kind of effect is that having on the local governance that people expect, if anything? And then how do you think that will kind of work its way through to the federal level where people, it seems like at least, people are starting to discern less and less between different types of governance?
Well, okay, there's actually two questions there. The first one is no doubt there's been a change, actually a shifting in population in a number of cities, and I think this has certainly been true demographically in Washington, D.C., over the last 10, 20 years. And it's partly a reflection of shift of what the city is all about. Historically, in the 19th century, we're used to thinking of cities as engines of economic production. And in fact, we continued with a great many commuters coming into the city as a place of work, even though they didn't want to live there. I think there's a switch because people can actually take their work with them. It's more cities as centers of living and centers of consumption. And that's partly why you're seeing this change in demographics. And you're absolutely right. People cannot tell the difference between a lot of levels of government, partly because of what's happened. I mean, you know, traditionally there were some fairly clear definitions as to what different levels of government would do. You know, this layer cake view of the way we were organized. It's for a long time, as former Senator Moynihan described it, that we've had this sort of marble cake view where different levels of government get involved in all sorts of different things. You've got cities with their own foreign policies, it seems. You've got the federal government, certainly in the form of Social Security and the direct delivery of services to citizens. So this mixing up of the game, of the rules of the game, is part of what's affecting people's views. And now, of course, you also have the Internet. So that if I'm a citizen and I want to have the latest public health information, I can go to my local government website, a state website, federal government website, a mixture of them. It's not clear to me who exactly is responsible for what, so sort of I go where I feel like going, where I find the best information. That's going to have a tremendous impact as well on how people view their loyalties to different government institutions.
And I think there's also a degree, too, of don't really care who, what level of government's providing this service as long as it happens. I'm not sure, for example, in a city that somebody cares which department or bureau of the city government is responsible for plowing the street when it snows so much as they care that the street's plowed. And the same thing goes in federal government, too. Somebody doesn't necessarily care which bureau or service, or even care necessarily that it's a federal, state, or local, as long as the service they expect to be provided is provided.
Absolutely true. And in fact, we'll take it even one step further. For those services the government offers that are intangible, you know, not like cleaning the streets of snow, but you know, the health example for that I mentioned, I may not even find the most useful information on my local government's website. I may find some other local government that's got the very best information of any level of government in any institution anywhere in America, and that's where I'm going to go to get my information. So, you know, you have a lot of choices. You can sort of shop around now, in a sense, for public services.
That concept is probably most difficult for federal agencies to get used to, especially the agencies that are in the business of providing information where they had, at least nationally, a monopoly for a long time, and information technology has kind of taken that monopoly away.
Well, you know, if you think about what governments are about, you know, despite differences in political philosophy, the one thing that's clear for all governments is that they have sovereignty over a piece of geography. Right, there are borders, and the whole trend of the Internet is to break down those borders, is to make it easier for people to jump across those, and even if they're outside the borders, to act as if they're still inside the borders. This is a tremendous challenge to the way government has traditionally looked at itself.
Dr. Jackman, it's great to have you on the program. Your contribution to this book, Transforming American Governance, is called A New Kind of Public Square for Urban America, and I appreciate you being here to help us understand it today.
Well, thank you very much.
Dr. Jackness is director of Cisco's IBSG Public Sector Group, former CIO and commissioner of Westchester County, New York. The indifference, I think, that I talked about with him is probably a bigger piece of what the average citizen is thinking about today than the awareness of where a particular service comes from. Is that, do you think that's a reasonable thing?
I do indeed.
Yeah. Alan Baloudis is with me today. He is director and distinguished fellow at the Internet Business Solutions Group at Cisco. The book is called Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We have one more of your cohort to join us in just a moment. Alan, a Thomas Stanton fellow at the Center for the Study of American Government at Johns Hopkins University, on with us next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps Base Commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort A.P. Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
The numbers mount, and so does the need of the more than 45,000 men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces wounded in action overseas. They are coming home, and you can help their transition by joining the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 15th, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing direct programs for our injured veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Robert Buggs is the Education Department's Chief Human Capital Officer.
We prioritize the position offerings. In other words, we may say all financial analysts, first come, first serve, may have a buyout. And if we don't exhaust that employee occupation, then we may go to another occupation.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're focused today on the book Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square. The co-editors of the book are Dwight Ink, Terry Buss, and Alan Baloudis, and Alan in studio with me to help me discuss this book with some of the folks who contributed to it. The whole conversation around, we talked in the first segment about collaboration, and the whole subject of collaboration has been something that agencies have struggled with, trying to just get a handle on what's appropriate, what's workable, what's feasible, and so on. Our next guest is writing about that subject in this book. He's writing about improving collaboration by federal agencies. Thomas Stanton is a fellow of the Center for the Study of American Government at Johns Hopkins University. Tom, thanks for being on with us this afternoon.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
What do you think is hard for agencies to grab onto when it comes to collaboration? Why has this been difficult for them to figure out which direction is going to work best?
There are several reasons. First of all, Congress is a natural centrifugal force. Different agencies report to different committees, subcommittees of Congress, and they have different expectations. So, for example, we have the Department of Defense and the VA that have been trying for years to coordinate health care so that people can make a seamless transition from DOD to VA health care. It hasn't happened yet. And now Congress is beginning to pay attention and trying to bring people together. The second problem is budgetary. If one agency can save a lot of money for another agency, but the first agency has to spend money to do it, it's really hard to convince the first agency that the country would be better off committing resources that way. And then finally, of course, the classic ways of doing business that different agencies have developed over time. And sometimes it's pure inertia that makes collaboration difficult.
Which of those do you think is hardest to crack?
Let me answer it, if I may, slightly differently. I think with leadership from the top, you can break through all of them. And what I did in the book, in my chapter in the book on collaboration, was propose that at least for domestic agencies, the Office of Management and Budget can play an essential role in solving simultaneously budget problems, in getting attention of agencies that have other priorities and getting them to cooperate, and actually then going to Congress, going to the appropriations committees, and suggesting ways to pool resources to get a better result. So with a champion who has some power, who can get the attention of agencies, collaboration can really happen.
You write about OMB, it's the only agency that currently has the capacity and clout to foster improved collaboration by federal agencies. Is the structure in place within OMB to do what you're proposing, or is that something that would have to be created?
Some of the OMB types on both the budget and the management side have begun to work in this direction. I think OMB needs to have some guidance from the management side, the M in OMB, in order to do this more effectively and more systematically. And especially now that agencies are going to have massive resource constraints, we're going to have a 10-year austerity budget before long. Agencies have a real incentive, and I think OMB has an incentive to try to get agencies to pool resources in order to get more done.
The last time I heard that term, the M in OMB, was a couple of days ago when a friend of mine said to me, I don't understand why nobody pays any attention to the M in OMB. The budget end of it seems to suck all the oxygen out of the room. Is that a fair statement, do you think?
That may be, but in the context of a 10-year austerity budget, I think, in fact, the B side of OMB is going to have an interest in promoting collaboration as well.
As things evolve, and are the agencies, do you think, willing to listen to OMB, or will the budgetary situations that we're all aware of just demand that they kind of do that by default?
I would say that it'll vary agency by agency. I worked intensively with OMB and federal credit agencies when John Koskinen was a deputy director of OMB for management. He had a superb style for bringing agencies together, getting them to cooperate. Some of your senior career executives would love to do it if they could figure out a way to do it without losing their own resources and at the same time to get stuff done. So somebody like John Koskinen, and I'm sure, could do it today. The current OMB has been very good on the technology side, but I'm not sure they've paid enough attention to issues like this one.
Your chapter in this book is very easy to understand. That's not always the case when it comes to these issues. So I commend you on just that, and recommend it to anybody who's interested in learning more about collaboration in government. Thanks for talking about it with us today.
Hey, thank you.
Tom Stanton is a fellow at the Center for the Study of American Government at Johns Hopkins University on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest in studio is Alan Baludis. He is one of the co-editors of the book Transforming American Governance. And we'll wrap up our conversation about this book and about transforming the government when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. If but I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Meeting mission goals through technology. Brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The U.S. Army says its new enterprise email system is bringing some side benefits along with improved messaging services. Moving the entire Army to one cloud-based platform forced the service to undertake a huge cleanup of its global networks. Networks Army leaders say had grown disorganized and non-standardized after 10 years of war. After finishing the cleanup, the Army plans to start a full-speed-ahead migration of the rest of its 1.4 million users within the next month.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
I work to help our nation, and my work makes an impact. I help our government and allies around the world keep their citizens safe from terrorism and cyber warfare. I work for ManTech International Corporation.
ManTech employees work side by side with our troops and government in the U.S. and overseas protecting our homeland. We have more than 10,000 professionals doing rewarding work every day. So if you're an IT professional, security expert, intelligence analyst, or engineer, apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
What's going on? June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Throughout the hour, we've been talking to some of the contributors to the book Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square. You can learn more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The co-editors of the book are Dwight Inc., who is a name that just about anybody that is involved at all with government management knows.
Icon in the public management field. Worked for seven presidents. Just
Terry Buss, also a name that people know, and my guest in studio today, Alan Baludis of Cisco. One of the things that I think is interesting about the conversations that we've had, Alan, with the contributors to this book, Dr. Childs, Dr. Jackness, Tom Stanton, they all talked about leadership, and they all talked about vision, but there are a lot of folks that believe that one of the issues that the government faces is there are a lot of people who want to think and talk about those issues, and not a lot of folks who are necessarily willing to put their shoulder to the wheel and make the thing happen. And maybe that's because there's not a whole lot of credit or glamour that goes along with those. Do you agree with that concept?
To some extent, I do, and I think that view is pressed very forcefully in the book itself by Dwight Inc., one of my co-editors. Dwight, I think, makes a very strong argument that, in fact, government has had this kind of capability to change and respond. It's demonstrated its capacity to deliver. And it's capable of doing so again. And he argues very forcefully in the volume not for revolutionary change, but to kind of returning to some of our roots. Separately, I've certainly raised this issue, not as well as Dwight has, but in my own feeble way, that today everybody seems to want to be a leader and a visionary, and nobody wants to be an administrator or a manager. But again and again, we find the problem is not in the strategy or the vision. It is in the implementation. I'd argue, I think that for the last 20, 30 years, we've been overled and undermanaged, so that we really need to begin to focus again on our need to actually deliver and to implement. And that if we do so, we can see just through that alone some dramatic improvement in government and the services it delivers to its citizenry.
We have about 30 seconds left. What do you want somebody to take away when they finish reading the last of the contributions to this book and put it on the shelf?
I want them to have a better sense of what a transformed American government might look like, the possibilities and the prospects, and I hope they have some sense of urgency of the need to address that important issue as part of the discussions we're having these days.
I appreciate the fact that you brought this book to my attention. I thank you for helping me arrange the conversations that we had about it and for coming in today to join me.
I appreciate being here. Thanks so much for having me, Francis.
Happy to do it. Always good to see you. Alan Baloudis of Cisco Systems, my guest for the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The book is called Transforming American Governance, Rebooting the Public Square. You can learn more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We have a link there so that you can find out all about it. Coming up on In Depth with Francis Rose, potential conflict of interest at DARPA. Has the Pentagon Inspector General interested? You'll learn what's going on there in just a few minutes on Federal News Radio. Radio 1500 AM.